a message. Like a seabird swooping and dipping over the waves for fish, so Hermes skimmed the blue waters of the ocean, letting its spray wet the wings of his sandals, a feeling he loved. On reaching Ogygia, he landed softly on the sands, making his way to the interior on foot, enchanted by the scents and sounds of the island. Ogygia is something of a mystery. As I've mentioned elsewhere, there is quite a lively industry amongst academics and amateur classicists naming and placing the islands and other locations of Homer's Greek world. But no one seems to have come up with a definitively convincing candidate for Ogygia. Gozo, the Maltese island, has been mentioned. Later Greeks thought Homer was describing an island that had since sunk into the sea after a volcano or earthquake. Strabo, the 1st century BC Greek geographer, historian and philosopher, thought long and hard on the subject and placed Ogygia in the Atlantic. He reasoned that this was where the river stream of Oceanus lay, which is mentioned when Odysseus first reaches the island, and which is now considered to be the Gulf Stream. Ogygia is also referred to as being a great distance from most of the Mediterranean and rarely visited. To Hermes' mind, the grandeur of Olympus and all the mighty palaces and halls of gods and mortal kings were pompous and hollow next to the sweetness and delight of earthly habitations such as this. In Fox TV's series Prison Break, the Yemeni prison in which the hero is held is called Ogygia. Perhaps Fox was hoping for a 7-year run. Hermes arrived at the mouth of Calypso's cave. He knew she was inside, for he could hear her voice raised in song and in the silences between the hush and knock of her shuttle as she worked her loom. She had lit a fire. A trail of cedarwood smoke filled the morning air. One heel raised, Hermes stood there, contrapposto, admiring the scene. All around the cave grew poplars, alders and cypresses, home to long-feathered hawks, owls and seabirds. Springs of clear, cool water bubbled from the rock. The ground was carpeted with violets, red clover and wild parsley. Around the cave itself, vines trailed, laden with grapes so plump and lustrous they looked ready to burst. Calypso knew him at once. Immortals always recognize each other, no matter how rarely they meet. She sat him down and served him ambrosia and red nectar. When he had finished, he sighed and leaned back, looking around. "You'll want to know why I'm here." "No doubt you will tell me in your own good time," said Calypso. She knew why he was here, of course. Every morning for the last 7 years, she had awoken with a dread that this day might come. "My father, Zeus, the father of us all." "The father of us all," echoed Calypso dutifully, "has sent me with this message. You keep a most unlucky prisoner here. You know that he yearns for another island, Ithaca, and yet you deny him any means to leave your Ogygia. Zeus commands you to release him now. It is not the man's fate to remain so far from his own land and people. He is destined to return to the hills and hearth of his Ithacan home." "Oh, the hypocrisy! Zeus may have his Io, his Ganymede, his Callisto, his Danae. Demeter can consort with Iasion. And you, the perfect Hermes, how many mortal boys and girls have you had the pleasure of? Because yes, my Odysseus is the son of Laertes, grandson of Autolycus, is he not? And who was the father of Autolycus, Autolycus the thief? Why, you." Demeter, goddess of fecundity, plucked the beautiful youth Iasion from the table of guests During the wedding of Cadmus and Harmonia, they made love in the field outside. When they returned to the feast, Zeus spotted the mud on Yasion's bottom and zapped him. Perhaps the first, but certainly not the last time that a skid mark gave the game away. Thank you, Stephen. We didn't need that. But Calypso is telling the truth. Hermes and Apollo both had their way in the same night with the beautiful princess Chione. The result was twins. From Apollo, she gave birth to Philemon, a singer and player of the lyre, second only in skill to Orpheus. From Hermes, she gave birth to Autolycus, who, unsurprisingly perhaps, turned out to be a thief, liar, rogue, and trickster. Blood will tell. All of heaven's tribe may consort with mortals, but not Calypso. Calypso must live alone and unhappy. Now steady on, Hermes took her hand. None of these affairs turned out well, you know. Callisto turned into a bear. Danae, a shower of gold. Io, a cow. Demeter, her liaison with Yasion, if I can put it so poetically, ended with Zeus smashing the poor lad with a thunderbolt, as I'm sure you'll remember. Yes, we have our fun, but that fun, like everything in the wide cosmos, is fated to dissolve. You've had 7 years of pleasure, Calypso, an eye blink for you, but a long time for a mortal. Now's the time to let him go. Zeus has made known his will. I don't need to tell you what a misery your life will become if you even think of disobeying. He watched her cry for a little while before stroking her wet cheek with his finger. She lifted up her head. I welcomed him after Zeus himself had smashed his ship and left him to drown. I fed him, clothed him, and loved him. I even offered to make him immortal. But Zeus's will is Zeus's will. So, yes, I'll send him off now. I have no ships here, so he will have to go with what he can build himself. For all he knows and I know, Zeus will change his mind one more time and destroy him with another of his thunderbolts. But don't worry. As far as I'm concerned, your great-grandson is free to find his way home. Despite herself, Calypso smiled. To call the eternal shining youth Hermes a great-grandfather seemed absurd. Hermes rose to his feet, returning the smile. You're doing the right thing. The miseries that my father could rain upon your head if you dared to disobey. A wink, a shuffle, a flicker, a shimmy, and he was gone.